We are talking once again with Joff Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, local writers and activists here to give us a wrap-up of this past week's news. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and happy 2022. It seems to be going swimmingly well so far. So at the top of the show, we do this every time somebody notable passes, and we just wanted to take a moment to remember Sidney Poitier, who, you know, for folks who weren't alive in the 60s, he was really, I mean, it's hard to overstate how important he was to the civil rights movement in terms of portraying characters that humanized African Americans in the United States at a time when, you know, the civil rights movement was just getting underway, and it was important to do that for white audiences, and it really made a difference. And he was a touchstone for so many people, and it's very sad that he's passed now.
And I believe, too, off-screen, he also joined in the movement the way many African-American celebrities did at that time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I have a quick story to share about that. Mm-hmm. Someone posted to social media yesterday. August 4th, 1964, the same day the FBI found bodies of civil rights workers James Chaney, Andy Goodman, and Mickey Schwerner. Singer
Belafonte.
Mm-hmm. Belafonte.
One of my mom's favorite artists.
Heard that SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee
mm-hmm.
needed at least $50,000 to survive. His friend and fellow activist, Sidney Poitier, delivered $70,000 raised to the Mississippi Delta. When they landed at the Greenwood Airport after dark, a pickup truck filled with white men pursued and rammed them. The two performers made it to their destination, delivering the money to keep Freedom Summer going. Quoting Belafonte, "We knew if we never did another thing together," Belafonte recalled, "this was to be forever cherished." So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Poitier got his start in acting because he had to fill a role when Belafonte didn't show up for, I think it was the Harlem Black Theater. And so Poitier took his place, and that was his big break.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it goes all the way back to the early 50s, their relationship together.
And there was another big loss yesterday, Lanny Guinier. Growing up, legal scholar and civil rights attorney, who was once nominated to be assistant attorney general by President Bill Clinton. She was the first woman of color to be appointed a tenured professor at Harvard Law School.
And the Republicans really objected to her.
Yeah, and the reason was because she talked frankly about masturbation, which, that is a universal experience, and I'm not sure why the Republicans lost their marbles around it, but they did.
Yeah. She was known for much, much more than that, of course.
Well, yes, of course. She was. But
highly qualified.
Highly qualified,
but not
part of what she was nominated for involved being able, especially in the age of AIDS, to talk about human sexuality and sexual practices. And that, unfortunately, was a bridge too far for a lot of Republicans.
Yeah.
In that respect, not much has changed.
No. Starting out with local news, and boy, here's two words you don't easily put together, even though we've had months to prepare for this. Mayor Harrell.
Yeah, he officially became mayor on New Year's Day. He's not having a formal inauguration ceremony because of the pandemic. So this is it. We now have Mayor Harrell, and we also have Council President
Deborah Juarez.
Yeah, and that's a phrase I'm going to have trouble getting used to also.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that the council chose Juarez as their president over, you know, there's at least a couple of council members who have more seniority, those being what's her name?
Lisa Herbold, yes, and Shama Sawant.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, Instead, they chose Juarez, who is ideologically much closer to Bruce Harrell, shares a lot, I think, of his authoritarian tendencies, certainly from what I've seen of her behavior on council over the past few years. And I think we're in for a rough ride in terms of accessibility to council as well as the mayor's office.
Yeah. So the city council had one meeting this week. It was a full council meeting on Tuesday at 2 p.m. To approve a bunch of reappointments and to vote on this, on the city council president, and to approve the new committee structure and the appointments, and the appointments for who would be the chairs, vice chairs, and who would sit on those committees. And as Jav said, Deborah Juarez is the new council president. And, you know, she sent out an email saying that she wants to focus on things like restructuring our community safety system and restoring public spaces, which I took to mean a direct reference to sweeping homeless encampments out of city parks and off of city sidewalks and so forth. So that's new council president Juarez. Interestingly, I think, is the Seattle Times, is that the Seattle Times editorial board lobbied for her to become the new council president. Usually the Seattle Times editorial board doesn't care and doesn't step in and comment on these things. But, this time around, they said they supported Juarez because they thought she would remove council member Lisa Herbold from the public safety committee that oversees the Seattle Police Department. But, it didn't really work out that way. So I just kind of want to talk about the new committee's structure and who's going to chair and vice chair and be members of those committees. So there's 9 committees, so it's going to take a little time to go through them all. Okay. The just taking them alphabetically by the name of the committee is there. First, there's the Economic Development, Technology, and City Light. That's going to be chaired by Sarah Nelson. And this is, I think, pretty common for a freshman city council member to chair this committee. Her vice chair is Deborah Juarez, which means that this kind of committee that's considered pretty easy is going to be given, the vice chairmanship is going to be given to the person who is the council president to kind of give them light duties in terms of the committees. Now, other members of the committee include Lisa Herbold, Dan Strauss, and Shama Sawant. This is the committee that focuses on businesses' concerns, which is why Sarah Nelson wanted it as the chair. But it's also supposed to address workers' concerns, which is why it also includes Shama Sawant and Lisa Herbold. It also covers things like workforce training and education and workforce development. Issues that businesses are concerned with, but that workers in particular seem to really value. Now, it also covers things like access to technology in the city. So something like a citywide broadband bill would have to pass through this committee. So that's the first committee, and that's, the new city council member, Sarah Nelson's committee.
And they'll have something to deal with right away, seeing as it was just reported a couple days ago that Seattle City Light sent out their bills to folks, and a lot of people ended up mysteriously having their utility bills show up with double
charges. Yeah. City Light's been going through this issue for a long time where their billing system is all messed up. And they keep reassuring the council, we'll get it fixed, and we'll get it fixed. But then, you know, seems like every few months or so, there's some scandal again with City Light overbilling people. So we'll see if Sarah Nelson can crack the whip and make them mind and clean house. Okay, so the second committee, taking them alphabetically, is finance and housing. And once again, Teresa Mosqueda will return as chair of this committee, which oversees the city budget, but also oversees things like new tax proposals, which she did last year with the Jumpstart payroll tax, and also oversees audits of the city budget. She will also have oversight of the Office of Housing. So that's a new portfolio added to the finance committee. This is at a time when the city is set to spend a record amount to build affordable housing in the next 2-year budget cycle. Now, the vice chair of this committee is Lisa Herbold, and the other three members of this committee are Alex Peterson, Sarah Nelson, and Andrew Lewis. Okay. So it looks like on this committee, you have Mosqueda, Herbold, and Lewis as a pretty solid progressive block with two of the most conservative council members, Peterson and Nelson, as the two dissenters. So we'll see how things go on the Finance and Housing Committee. Now, the third committee is Governance, Native Communities, and Tribal Governments, and that's going to be Deborah Juarez's committee to chair. She gave up public assets, you know, those big projects like the waterfront redevelopment and the renovation of Key Arena, in order to take on the role of council president. Okay. And this committee is going to be kind of a lighter duty committee for her, but it also syncs up well with her duties as council president, because the governance committee typically involves the chair acting as liaison with counties, the state government, and the federal government. Of course, she's also going to keep her focus on Native American issues, but she will also gain oversight over ethics and elections, the city auditor, and the Office of Labor Standards through the governance committee. Her vice chair is going to be Alex Peterson, and the three other members on the committee are Teresa Mosqueda, Shama Sawant, and Dan Strauss. Okay, so kind of an interesting mix there. On the fourth committee is the Land Use Committee. That's Dan Strauss is going to stay the chair of that committee. This is the committee that focuses on land use issues, including rezoning, land use regulations, and the city's comprehensive plan and comprehensive planning. And it oversees the Department of Construction and Inspections. Strauss will also oversee the Equitable Development Initiative, which is meant to make sure that communities of color and lower income communities in the city of Seattle have proportionately more money to deal with developing the infrastructure that they need, because historically they've been underserved in terms of developing infrastructure and getting tax dollars from the city. At the same time, I think there's also the concern that many lower income communities are going through a lot of gentrification, and the Land Use Committee is concerned often, at least here in Seattle, with the idea that there must be ways that we can manage zoning and manage land use regulations in order to try to slow down the gentrification, rising rents, and rising property values in some lower income communities that can end up pushing a lot of those folks out of the city because they can't afford to rent or to live or to, you know, pay property taxes in their neighborhood.
So it's a really important committee.
It's a very important committee. Yeah. His vice chair is Tammy Morales. And that, I think, is the main reason why she chose to vice chair that committee, is because she represents District 2, which is Southeast Seattle, where a lot of those lower income communities are that are struggling with rapid gentrification. And the other three members on the committee are Teresa Mosqueda, Alex Peterson, of course, and Sarah Nelson, of course, kind of to try to, I think, swing Dan Strauss towards the more conservative. He kind of sits in the middle in terms of policies on the city council. He sometimes sides with the progressive, sometimes sides with the more conservative folks. And this committee, in terms of the vice chair and its other members, is split 50-50 in that direction. And Dan Strauss would be the swing vote. So that's going to be a committee to watch. And then, of course, we have the other committee that also deals with these kind of neighborhood issues and equity issues. And that's the Neighborhoods, Education, Civil Rights and Culture Committee. And that is the one that Tammy Morales will chair. It's going to oversee the Department of Neighborhoods and the work of the Department of Neighborhoods in looks at how the city spends its money in each of the different neighborhoods and addresses neighborhoods and neighborhood planning issues. She will also have the portfolio for education and early learning initiatives, including the Families Education Preschool and Promise Levy and projects that are meant to close the learning gap for communities of color, and the treatment of students of color in Seattle schools. She will also oversee the Office for Civil Rights, which is very important, has a very important remit in terms of education and the neighborhoods. And she will also oversee the arts and culture portfolio, which includes nightlife, special events, and the city's arts and culture fund, among other things. Now, her vice chair for this committee is Shama Sawant. And the other three members are Dan Strauss and, of course, Sarah Nelson and Andrew Lewis. So a pretty good, strong, progressive group on that committee. But of course, there had to be one conservative member on that committee. And that person is Sarah Nelson. Now, the sixth committee is the Public Assets and Homelessness Committee. And that's Andrew Lewis. In the last 2 year cycle, Andrew Lewis was the chair of the council's council's special committee on homelessness. His committee has now been made a permanent committee, and he's been given the portfolio that Deborah Juarez gave up, the public assets portfolio. So he's chairing this committee. And Lewis is going to continue to oversee the shift to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority in terms of homelessness policy and spending, which means things like overseeing the King County Regional Homelessness Board to help determine who gets to sit on the board. He'll be looking at how they spend their money and what the city's financial contribution to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority actually gets spent on and how much the city gives to the authority and why.
Which is going to be major in this coming couple of
years. It is major, yeah. Yep. And it's a highly politicized committee and highly politicized work at this point because of all of the, you know, media coverage and all of the complaining that more conservative members of the Seattle business community have been doing over homelessness and crime on the streets, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, not to mention the actual crisis of homelessness.
Yeah, not to mention the actual fact that homelessness is actually growing, particularly because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the fact that so many people have lost their jobs and not adjusted well to working from home.
And because of the gentrification we talked about earlier.
Yes, and also because some folks, in spite of the eviction moratoriums and the fact that the city's been trying to give renters financial assistance to keep them in their homes, that landlords have started evicting people. So.
And I've heard plenty of stories from people who've applied for that rental assistance that just don't hear back. It does not seem like a very functional program.
They've had to wait and wait and wait, and now we're hearing that program could be running out of money sooner than expected. So we're expecting there to be a big wave of people being evicted. So that is going to be a huge part of the political process in the coming year. Now, this committee will also pick up control over the city's parks and public facilities, like the Seattle Center and its facilities, Woodland Park Zoo, the Seattle Aquarium, the various community centers in each neighborhood, and the Seattle Public Library system. So the public assets portion of this, Deborah Juarez, when she had public assets, she focused on big projects because that's really what she was interested in and what she did in the private sector before she was elected to the city council was raise financing for big projects. It'll be interesting to see what Andrew Lewis makes of the public assets portfolio. There's a whole lot of things in that underneath that public assets portfolio that are not big ticket items like the downtown waterfront redevelopment or converting Northgate Mall into a public ice rink or practice rink or bringing an NHL team to Seattle. I mean, there's a whole lot of small things like the community centers, like pea patches, like how the public parks are used. And there's also this question of the city's policy to do homeless encampment sweeps in the city parks. We'll see if grouping the public assets portion portfolio with the homelessness committee will change or if Andrew Lewis will have the ability to change that policy at all. Now, his vice chair in this committee is Teresa Mosqueda. And the other three members are Tammy Morales, Lisa Herbold, and of course Deborah Juarez, who had the public assets under her control previously. So a very strong progressive group on that committee with only Deborah Juarez among the conservatives sitting on that homelessness committee. So we'll see if that committee has the ability to direct the city's homelessness response, and if they're able to change the sweeps policy under Harrell.
It should also make the combination of those issues should make for pretty spicy public comments prior to the meeting.
Yeah, yeah, we'll
spicy.
See. So the seventh committee is the Public Safety and Human Services Committee, and that's Lisa Herbold's committee. She's going to continue to be the chair of that committee in spite of what the Seattle Times was hoping. Of course, she'll oversee the Seattle Police Department and its three oversight bodies, the Office of Police Accountability, the Office of the Inspector General of the Seattle Police Department, and the Community Police Commission. She will also have oversight of the City Attorney's Office. So the new quarterly reports that Ann Davison will be required to make will be before Lisa Herbold's committee. So that will be interesting. And Herbold will continue to oversee the fire department, emergency management, the Seattle Municipal Court, of course, also the diversion programs, including youth justice and programs to address domestic violence and sexual assault. She will also continue to oversee the human services department. Her vice chair of this committee is Andrew Lewis. Again, he did that in the last two-year cycle. And the other three members are Teresa Mosqueda, Alex Peterson, and, of course, Sarah Nelson.
And we should also note that that is the committee that has the charge for the process that Herbold has already started overseeing of trying to sort of reimagine you know, ways that public safety can better serve the city. And, you know, that came out of the defund SPD movement. That process, I think there's a 5-year plan in place. And, you know, that is ongoing. It takes a lot of time because, it's a very large and unwieldy bureaucracy, but that process is ongoing, and that's something that Herbold will continue to oversee. And that is exactly why the Seattle Times was opposed to having her continue in that role.
Yeah, and that's why both Alex Peterson and Sarah Nelson are sitting on this committee, and it's not just one or the other of them. And also why Teresa Mosqueda is a member of this committee, because she chairs the budget committee. And the city is putting a lot of money and shifting and in the city budget, the city council shifted a lot of money around in the budget to try to reimagine policing and public safety. And Mosqueda has a lot invested in trying to make that work. So that's the reason why she will also be sitting on that committee. So another committee that's going to grab a lot of headlines this year. It will be interesting to see how the new council member, Sarah Nelson, does on the Public Safety and Human Services Committee.
And I got a feeling the Seattle Times is writing some of those headlines as we speak.
I know. Yes, they have a few in the hopper, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, there's just two more left. The Sustainability and Renters' Rights Committee, that's Shama Sawant's committee, will continue with her as the chair. It works on renters' rights, including a big rent control bill that Sawant started last year and would like to finish, I'm sure, this year. She will oversee the enforcement of renters' rights by city departments and work to craft other new legislation to deal with things like gentrification and rising rents and background checks and so forth for renters. She also holds the Green New Deal portfolio and has overseen the start of the Green New Deal Oversight Board. It'll be interesting to see if she can push the city forward in its effort to cut greenhouse gas emissions, which Seattle hasn't been making a whole lot of progress on just yet. Part of having the sustainability portfolio is overseeing whether the various city departments are meeting their goals in terms of cutting greenhouse gas emissions. That I don't know how well Sawant's been focusing on that. I know she's been focusing a lot on renters' rights, particularly helping renters survive the COVID-19 pandemic and the impending end of the eviction moratoriums. And now with trying to get the city to enforce the renters' rights provisions that have been passed. So I think that, again, is going to take up a lot of her time, but it would be great to see more progress on the sustainability sustainability goals for the city. Now, her vice chair, unfortunately, is Sarah Nelson on this committee. And there's a reason why Sarah Nelson chose to be vice chair of this committee. She is going to be the landlord voice on the renters' rights committee. I think that's the main reason why so many real estate developers and landlords supported her run for the city council, was specifically so she could be the foil for Shama Sawant on the renters' rights committee if Sawant survived her recall vote, and she did.
Which they also supported.
Yeah, which they also heavily supported that recall vote. Now, the three other members on this committee are Tammy Morales, Deborah Juarez, and Andrew Lewis. And unfortunately, it looks like there is a majority of conservative council members on this committee to try to hold Shama Sawant and Tammy Morales in check. And I find that in a time when so many renters are facing eviction and facing extremely large rental increases. I had an enormous rental increase this year. And my landlord put it down to inflation. But I just don't believe that inflation is that high, at a time when renters are extremely stressed. It seems pretty depressing to me to see that the renters' rights committee is going to be dominated by these sort of pro landlord and pro real estate developer council members like Lewis, Juarez, and Sarah Nelson.
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent committee for Sawant to chair, but she'll definitely have her work cut out for her.
Yeah, certainly will have. Now, the final committee is the Transportation and Seattle Public Utilities. Alex Peterson will again chair this committee, which oversees kind of the other big chunk of the city's assets, its roads and bridges, and its drinking water and wastewater infrastructure and services. In addition, he'll oversee the city's transit policies, pedestrian and bike infrastructure and policies, the bike and electric scooter share program, and serve as the city's liaison to Sound Transit and to the county, state, and federal government transportation agencies. Now, the Seattle Public Utilities portfolio, which is part of this committee, also includes an environmental aspect. So keeping the city's drinking water resources clean and advancing salmon, steelhead, and trout recovery plans. And the transportation piece, of course, also has important environmental aspects, too, since the city's main source of greenhouse gas emissions is its transportation sector. So one of the more conservative city council members is once again chair of the Transportation and Public Utilities Committee, and his vice chair is Dan Strauss. The other three members are Shama Sawant, Lisa Herbold, and Tammy Morales. Fortunately, a progressive majority there on the very, very important Transportation and Public Utilities Committee. So again, if you look at the committees each council member sits on, so kind of by council member rather than committee by committee, you can see some really interesting patterns. So for example, Lisa Herbold still has hold of the Public Safety Committee, but she's also vice chairing the Budget Committee, two big powerhouse committees there, which will also, and the Budget Committee will also oversee the Office of Housing. So a lot of money involved there with the Office of Housing, and a whole lot of money directed to try to make sure that there is affordable housing, enough affordable housing available to help house people, particularly people who are trying to get off the street. Now, she's a member on three other committees, the one Sarah Nelson is chairing for economic development, the one her friend and colleague Andrew Lewis is chairing, public assets and homelessness, and the one Alex Peterson is chairing, transportation and public utilities. So Herbold really has a lot of work ahead of her this coming year, with kind of acting as a foil to Sarah Nelson and Alex Peterson on their committees, but also helping Andrew Lewis with the Public Assets and Homelessness Committee, the other kind of big politicized committee this year, in addition to public safety.
And she's also got a lot of power.
She does at this point, and a lot of institutional memory, as being one of the longest sitting Seattle City Council members.
Yes.
You see
and being a legislative aide in Niklakata for 20 years before that.
Before that, yeah. Now, you see a similar pattern with Shama Sawant, the other long-sitting city council member. She chairs her Renters' Rights Committee and vice chairs Tammy Morales' committee that oversees civil rights, neighborhoods, and education. So two important committees for people of color and for maintaining advancing equal rights within the city of Seattle. She's also a member on three other committees chaired by the three more conservative city council members. So Deborah Juarez's committee, Alex Peterson's committee, and Sarah Nelson's committee. So working as a foil on those committees kind of owned by the conservative members on the council. And you also see the same thing with the conservative council members, right? Sarah Nelson is chairing the Economic Development Committee, but is vice chairing Shama Sawant's committee. And as I said, being the voice for the landlord lobby on the Renters' Rights Committee, she's a member on four other committees, not three like the other council members. And that's because she's the newest council member, and it takes some pressure off of Deborah Juarez and allows Deborah Juarez to be a member on only two other committees while she's serving as council president. But those four committees that Sarah Nelson sits on are Mosqueda's Budget Committee, Morales' Neighborhoods Committee, Herbold's Public Safety Committee, and Dan Strauss' Land Use Committee. And, of course, in exchange, Deborah Juarez is going to vice chair Sarah Nelson's Economic Development Committee and kind of show her the ropes. So you can kind of see the you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back there among the conservative council members. Juarez is going to sit on only two other committees. That's Lewis's Public Assets and Homelessness Committee and Sawant's Renters' Rights Committee. So, again, they kind of spreading out the work among the conservative council members. Alex Peterson is going to co-chair for Deborah Juarez on her governance committee. Again, kind of scratching her back to ensure that she stays in the conservative coalition. While sitting on three other key committees, Mosqueda's Budget Committee, Herbold's Public Safety Committee, and Strauss's Land Use Committee. So three of the big powerhouse committees there for Alex Peterson. I think it's going to be a very, very interesting year.
And the most important committee members mm-hmm. are the members of the public that
yes.
can weigh into all these.
Who yep. show up for these meetings, who log in and sign up to make public comments and track legislation and weigh in so that city council members can hear your thoughts.
And I'm hoping that as council president, Juarez won't, sort of repeat the mistakes of the Bruce Harrell presidency era on city council, where he was really hostile to public comment, particularly public comment that he didn't agree with. And Juarez has had a history on council of being really sensitive to any criticism of her votes. So you know, I'm hoping that she won't have the same anti-democratic tendencies that Harrell had. I'm not hopeful on that score, but we'll see how he does.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be more important that people really pay attention to the committee that you care, the committee or committees that you care about, because that's where you're going to be able to have your public comment heard by the council members that have the most influence on the policy that's in front of their committee.
That is where the sausage gets made.
It is where the sausage gets made. It's where your public input really helps the most. Mm-hmm. When you go to the full city council meetings to give public comment, yeah, that gets a lot of press coverage, but it isn't necessarily as influential as work in the committees. So I think it's a really good idea for people to pick one or two committees they really care that are going to hear the types of bills they really care about, whether that's the Public Safety Committee, whether that's the Renters' Rights Committee, whether that's the Land Use Committee. And, you know, show up for the virtual meetings occasionally. And if you can't show up for the virtual committee meetings, then maybe you don't have the technology to do that. Maybe you don't have the time because you're working. You can always submit comments to the city council city council members.
By the time proposed legislation gets to the full council, pretty much all the council members have their minds made up. So, you know,
and most of the work's already been done on crafting the bill.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of the amendments that you hear in the full council sessions are just for show. They're already preordained that they're going to pass or not pass. So,
yeah, they've already been proposed before maybe and been voted down, or they've been proposed in a different form and already been worked hard on to change and water them down or make them conform to get a majority vote. And they're pretty much final by the time they reach the full council. So it's important to kind of pay attention to what's going on in the committees and give your input there and help with the sausage making.
Yeah. Yum, yum.
If you want your spices in the mix.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So plenty of work ahead for everybody involved.
Uh-huh. And we will have plenty to talk about in the coming year.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on. Current King County prosecutor Dan Satterberg is retiring, apparently.
Yeah, Satterberg has been the county prosecutor for the last 15 years. The King County Prosecutor's Office is responsible for filing felony charges in King County, including the city of Seattle. The city's attorney's office only can file misdemeanors. Nevertheless, Satterberg has embraced diversion programs. However, he does support the new youth jail and youth detention in general, while having scaled back somewhat youth detention under the direction from County Executive Dow Constantine. So there are many critics of the King County Prosecutor's Office who say, you know, Satterberg's drug his feet on ending youth detention, and that is absolutely true. But he is now retiring. Already three people have filed to run for the King County prosecutor's position in this year's elections. Those three people are Lisa Mannion, who's served as Satterberg's chief of staff for 15 years. She formed the elder abuse program in the King County prosecutor's office, and she has served as the co-founding partner of Choose 180, one of the leading diversion programs in King County. She wants to be the first woman of color to serve as the county prosecutor, and she says that addressing gun violence will be one of her chief concerns. She also sits on the board of the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle. So very much within the mainstream of the Democratic Party, but in terms of working on diversion programs and moving the county towards diversion and addressing community issues that can lead to crime and community inequity, she's probably the best of the three choices. Now,
and bear in mind, I mean, says before voters decided to make the King County prosecutor a nonpartisan office, Satterberg was a Republican, as was his predecessor. So that's the history going back at least 30 years of that particular office. And, you know, we'll see whether the changing demographics of King County you know, make a candidate like her more palatable. But there is a history of electing fairly conservative prosecutors to that office.
Yeah. Now, the other candidates, King County Councilmember Rod Dombrowski has announced that he's going to run. He was under a cloud this past year when the chief of staff of the King County Council, Carolyn Bush, resigned and was paid a settlement after saying that she was tired of Rod Dombrowski's verbal abuse. Okay. And this came after allegations that Dombrowski was particularly abrasive towards female staff members and his female council colleagues. Okay. Dombrowski has served on the county council for 8 years. Before that, he was a policy analyst for Governor Gary Locke, and he worked for PACCAR Financial and for the law firm of Foster Pepper on real estate land use ethics laws, open public meetings requirements, and public disclosure issues. He's, as far as I can tell, never worked in criminal law. So he has a legal background. It was a while ago. And I don't think he's fully qualified to run a department that oversees criminal.
Yeah, felony prosecutions.
Law. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the third candidate is Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell, who was a Republican for 20 years and then switched to the Democratic Party in 2012. In 2014, he was elected mayor of Federal Way on his third attempt, but his first time running as a Democrat. Okay. Before that, he sat on the Federal Way City Council, where he spearheaded the movement from a council-centric form of government to a strong mayoral model. And he was a Republican during those years. Okay. He also has worked in the King County Prosecutor's Office from 1998 to 2013, where he eventually became the Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney. So lots of experience in the King County Prosecutor's Office. So I think of the three candidates, these other two candidates, he would pose the biggest challenge to Lisa Mannion. Even though he ran for the King County prosecutor's job in 2007, Jim Farrell lost to Dan Satterberg in that race. Now he's back for another run, this time as a Democrat. But of course, he's obviously a conservative Democrat, pro-police, tough on crime, and pro-business. And he says he left the Republican Party mostly because of its anti-science bias, its denial of climate change, and because of tax cuts for the rich instead of people who actually work for a living. Good for him. He's not a total idiot.
of those things have anything to do with the King County prosecutor's job.
Yeah, but I don't think he's a real Democrat either. So I think the best of those three candidates is Lisa Mannion. And that I don't think Rod Dombrowski is qualified. Jim Farrell, I think, is still a Republican at heart.
Still time for other people to throw their hats into the ring.
Plenty of time.
Moving on, unique situation weather-wise here this week.
We had more evidence of climate change, as though we needed it. The snow is gone, thank goodness, but we had torrential rains, which is kind of unusual for early January. And, of course, heavy snow in the mountains. And so we had a situation at one point where all four of the mountain passes were closed, eastern Washington. They still are. And I-5 was closed going south to Portland because of flooding in the Lewis County. So, when we talked early on in the pandemic about, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we could just isolate ourselves from the rest of the country? Well, geographically, we had that this week, at least for a while. But it wasn't because of the pandemic, it's because of climate change. And this, again, is the new normal. Now, at least we have a good snowpack this year. That certainly is not going to be a problem. But again, with the El Nino weather patterns, we're likely to have more extreme weather between now and March. So, stay tuned, because this is going to keep happening.
Increasing precipitation is one of the models that climatologists forecasted for the Pacific Northwest, and we're certainly getting it this year. I can foresee that even though we've got a nice snowpack in the mountains that's about 20% higher than it usually is, it's possible that we have record warming like we've had in past years, that melts a lot of that snow. And when that record snowpack melts, it's going to mean a lot more flooding, not just on the Chehalis River like we had this week, but on many other rivers throughout western Washington. And that can bring a whole nother disaster upon us. So
yep.
That's the face of climate change for yep. the Pacific Northwest.
Stay tuned. Yep.
All right. And moving on, a big story this week about the SPD, Seattle Police Department, doing a disinfo campaign during 2020, June of 2020, June 8th of 2020.
Yeah, and we actually had a couple really bad police stories this week. We'll start with this one. Remember where we were in early June of 2020, the George Floyd protests were going strong. The SPD had just abandoned the East Precinct on Capitol Hill. And so, what was first known as CHOP, or CHAZ, was, taking shape in Cal Anderson Park and that immediate area. And, of course, the occupiers there were very concerned about security and, you know, SPD decided to heighten that tension and, by claiming falsely at the behest of a couple of senior SPD officers that, the Proud Boys were on their way to confront the protesters. And Mike, do you have that audio?
A couple of supervisors ordered four of their underlings to fake chatter on the Seattle Police Band radio that there was a Proud Boys demonstration, and that's what this audio is.
Yeah, knowing that people were monitoring that channel.
Mm-hmm.
And for context, the police had just abandoned the East Precinct.
Yeah. So, and there had been a car that had mowed into protesters at one point,
right?
And it wasn't clear whether that was a right wing initiative or not.
But everybody assumed it was.
Yeah, there was a lot of tension around security at that protest.
All right, so here we go.
One officer.
So we're going to be the ones taking my group down around City Hall to monitor the group of the Proud Boys. The gathering right now is small, but we don't need any other units at this time.
3 Echo, we're in the area as well. We'll float around that area just in case while we monitor everything.
Received one off advising that this is a fairly small group for now. They may be marching around City Hall jail area.
3 Echo, yeah, just for information. Small group, possible Proud Boys. It looks like a few of them might be open carrying, but right now they seem pretty peaceful.
Radio copy, advising just a small group of possibly Proud Boys, but it looks like everybody is staying peaceful for now.
I was just updating that the crowd size kind of holds steady. A few more stragglers joining every so often. One Adam, this is TAC 4. We're using it to monitor the gathering, City Hall. One Alpha, was that for our group? Do you think those are other Proud Boys just coming down here? Seems like they're kind of starting to muster up, maybe thinking about marching around.
2 Charlie affirm. They look associated with that group that you're monitoring.
1 Alpha, looks like they're going to stay on the sidewalk, go with the flow of traffic. At this point, all they're carrying is maybe a flag. Haven't seen any long weapons. Might be one. Carry one sidearm on a holster. And 1 Alpha to radio, just be advised, the group is very boisterous tonight, so if you get some calls about some kind of menacing verbiage, that's all it is.
Hey, can you give me a call on my login? We need to talk about what's going on down here.
Hearing from the Proud Boys group, they're not very happy with their response from the audience down here. They may be looking for somewhere else for confrontation. Break. That, so we don't have a merging of groups.
Okay.
So okay. You heard that they were open carry. You heard that there was a long
fake.
Weapon. Mm-hmm. And none of that was actually happening at all. It was all invented.
You'll notice that they said Proud Boys multiple times. Each person who participated in that conversation kept reiterating Proud Boys, Proud Boys, Proud Boys. Group is very boisterous, looking for a confrontation. Terms like
looking to move to a different area.
Yeah.
It was all intended to scare the protesters on Capitol Hill and put them on edge. And it probably worked in that respect.
Oh, yeah.
I remember hearing those reports in real time because streamers were passing it on. Because, you know, on social media, plenty of people were streaming the event live at the time. And it did get around. It was successful in that respect. It was a very successful disinformation campaign by SPD for what purpose? What purpose exactly? We don't know what their thinking was because there hasn't been a whole lot of transparency. The OPA finding that the complaint about this was in fact justified noted that the senior officers who ordered this and ordered the other four SPD members to carry that fake mission out, those senior members are no longer with SPD. There's been no recommendation of discipline for the four others who participated who are still in SPD. So there's really no accountability for this at all, and there's no transparency as to why exactly this happened. But what exactly is the purpose of SPD, scaring the public? Why?
City of Kent also had an update this week.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. So Assistant Police Chief Derek Kemmerzell got in trouble, I guess, over the weekend for, Nazi insignia in his office and being captured on social media, giving a Heil Hitler salute, apparently, when he was standing behind the mayor of Kent, and, various other complaints about his behavior that seemed to be, Nazi-friendly. Kemmerzell is a nice Aryan name, so, he was captured at an Oktoberfest with the Heil Hitler salute. There had been complaints for the last year about this. They had been buried, and we found out this week that once this story hit the local media and the social media accounts for the Kent Police Department and the City of Kent were swamped with negative comments, that those negative comments were buried. They were buried by the person who administers the social media accounts for the City of Kent, who happens to be the wife of the police chief. So that's going on, too. So there's actually two layers at least to this scandal. But there have been complaints about the Kent Police Department's, internal culture for many, many years. And this has really just brought them all to the surface and really underscored that some of these suburban police departments are extremely problematic also. We talk a lot about the King County Sheriff's Office and about SPD just because they have such large remits. But the suburban police departments can be highly problematic as well. And we're seeing that this week with the City of Kent.
I also wanted to mention, too, that the Community Police Commission is going to be hosting some outreach meetings for the court-appointed monitor of the Seattle police reform process to explain to the public what the status of the police reform process is here in the city of Seattle. Now, these meetings will be held. The first one is going to be held this coming Tuesday, January 11th from 6 to 8 p.m., and the topic will be crisis intervention. The monitor, Antonio Oftili, is expected to talk about progress made on how Seattle police officers engage with people suffering from a mental health or physical crisis. The other two meetings will be held on February 8th and March 8th. The topics will be stops and detentions for the February meeting and use of force for the March meeting.
And those are online meetings?
Yeah, those are going to be virtual meetings via Zoom. Preliminary reports are going to be posted on the monitor's website at seattlepolicemonitor.com. www.alphaalpha.org. You can visit that website to read the first preliminary report, which has already been posted on crisis intervention, and you can leave comments there. To join the Zoom event, you can go to the Community Police Commission's website because they are hosting the meetings at, that's at www.seattle.gov/community-police-commission. And then you want to click on the link in the center of the homepage for a January 11th Community Police Commission community engagement meeting. And that will allow you to add it to your calendar and get the details for the Zoom meeting. And I think it would be really interesting for a number of members of the public to attend that virtual meeting and to raise questions with the police monitor about things like what you just heard. The faked Proud Boys event on police band.
Yeah, and why we're getting incidents like that 10 years into a so-called reform process.
Because right.
The culture of the city of Seattle does not seem to have improved in terms of its seeing certain members of the public as an enemy, even though they're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
And the oversight mechanisms that we currently have in place appear to be faulty weak.
The fact that we found out about the disinformation campaign through the OPA a year and a half after it happened, what took so long? You know, why the lack of transparency? And those are all questions that need to be asked and asked again.
Yeah. So just a reminder that this one coming up this Tuesday is on crisis intervention. So particularly on dealing with folks who are undergoing a crisis, like folks who are living on the street, people who are having a mental crisis or are in physical crisis. The one in February is going to be on stops and detentions. So stops and frisks and detentions, and the one in March will be use of force. So I think the third one in March is going to be the one where they talk about the use of force during the George Floyd protests. So you can kind of gear up for those.
Yeah. Just all of a minute left to talk about the outcome of in Georgia this week.
Well, I'd rather talk about the pandemic because that's affecting everybody.
Okay, in a minute.
Yeah. Washington reached 10,000 deaths yesterday, which was expected. But the real headline should be the astronomical number of Omicron infections in King County. The previous peak during Delta was about 800 a day of new infections. We're now around 15,000 a day. We were well over 10,000 three different days this week.
15,000 is for the entire state of Washington. King County's at 3,323.
Okay.
New cases
per
day.
You're right. I misspoke. But it's still very, very high.
Still much higher.
And the fact that we're getting, you know, four times the number of cases means that even though Omicron is on average milder, you're still getting a lot of people in hospitals. The UW system is saying that they're basically swamped, and they're also having staff shortages because a lot of their staff is out sick and has to quarantine. This is something we're seeing all over the country, and we're seeing it interfere with the economy because it's interfering with teaching. It's interfering with first responders and law enforcement and healthcare workers. And, you know, it's interfering with agriculture and shipping. So this is starting to have a serious effect on the economy just because people are out sick. It is probably why the CDC last week reduced their recommendation for quarantine to 5 days if you're not symptomatic. The CDC's messaging has been very muddled. The real takeaway is if you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated. If you've been vaccinated but haven't gotten the booster, you need the booster to have protection against Omicron. Get the booster. If you're eligible for it. And, you know, keep social distancing, keep wearing a mask when you're in the public, and even outdoors, regardless of your vaccination status. This is really a level of an infection that we have not seen before with this pandemic, and it is not time for business as usual. Well, that's our cheerful roundup for the week.
Yeah.